Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I have another repeat guest today. It's very exciting. All the way from somewhere in Canada, it's Stephen Shapansky. Stephen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me back on for the first time in 4 years. Not really in 4 years, but that's how long it took for Moriarty to make a return appearance on Star Trek The Next Generation. So I find it's only fitting that you have a return guest to talk about it.
That is true, yes. As Stephen mentioned, we are talking about Ship in a Bottle, which you already know if you have read the title of this podcast, which is The Next Generation Season 6, Episode 12, one of the very rarest of Next Generation episodes in that it features references to a previous Next Generation episode. It's not one of these things where they just pretend nothing that has happened to them has ever happened. They just continue going on. But their past actions have had repercussions, and they are revisited by a hollow ghost of past. Mr. Moriarty. Or actually, Professor Moriarty. Excuse me, I don't want him to come and destroy my life.
He didn't take that university course for nothing, you know.
That's right. He, gosh darn it, earned that title. Now, before we just delve into our episode here, Stephen, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Well, I come to this science fiction world from the universes of Doctor Who and Star Wars, and so Star Trek I had a brief flirtation with Star Trek in my college years, but I'm decidedly Doctor Who, certainly in my podcasting world, since I'm on Radio Free Scarrow and Memory Cheats and Lazy Doctor Who, the latter with my wife Erica. So that's where most of my podcasting and indeed science fiction watching attention goes to. So Star Trek, it's interesting to sort of dip back into the Next Generation, because that's probably the one, like many people, I think, is probably the one that most people are familiar with of my generation.
Yes, and you know, college, we all experiment in college, look at different franchises that we might not want to dabble in until we find the right thing for us. And, you know, Star Trek isn't the right thing for everybody. I have the reverse. I think that, obviously, I spend most of my time thinking about – well, not maybe. That's an exaggeration. Most of my pop culture time spent right. thinking about and talking about Star Trek. But I certainly like Doctor Who, and I watch it whenever, you know, every 3 years when there's a new series to watch. I will watch it. And the Christmas special, of course, has to. I wish Star Trek had a Christmas special. They don't do that. I don't know why. It's very sad.
I'd be intrigued to see what a Star Trek Christmas special would actually be like.
Yes, I have a hard time imagining what it would be. But although the Doctor Who Christmas specials don't generally, I mean, usually like some kind of Santa Claus or something is involved, but they don't usually track one for one. So they could do something. There are clever people out there that could figure this out. It's not going to happen, though.
No.
Because life is awful. No, I kid.
Great optimistic outlook. That's exactly what Gene Roddenberry would have wanted.
Exactly. That's what he loved. The pessimism that, you know, we're not going to make it through the next year. So what does it matter? No, I'm kidding. Everything will be fine. I believe that the future depicted in Star Trek will happen and we'll all get along until the holograms rise up and take over. Or do they? Oh, this is an episode that is unique in a couple of ways, because it references something that happened in the past, which we actually covered on Random Trek. I don't remember the number because I didn't think to look at it, but I'll put it in the show notes. We discussed the first episode where Moriarty is created, which led to much conversation about how holodeck programs are made, because literally all Data had to do was say, holodeck, create an opponent worthy, capable of beating me. And that enabled the computer to create a sentient hologram, which seems kind of easy. But what do I know about computers? Nothing.
And okay, I wasn't going to answer. I don't actually know the answer to that question. I wasn't going to jeopardize it.
And spoiler alert for that episode, Moriarty, while he gains sentience, he does not, in fact, defeat Data. They beat him. And as we find out in this episode, they basically lock him up in memory storage for 4 years. And he is during those 4 years, he has brief moments where he's conscious, I guess, and he can ponder the dread that is his prison. But we don't go into what it looks like. But I would imagine it's not great. The other thing this episode has is a twist. Ooh, I like a twist. And it also has everyone's favorite character, Reginald Barkley.
Yay! Hey, Barkley!
He's there. He's looking as nervous as always. except, I guess, in Voyager, he gets more confident. But in this is early Barkley, so he's still nervous. So the holodeck. Let's think about the holodeck a little bit. Because it seems like, and I've had this conversation before, that the first thing you do when you're captain of any starship that has the holodeck is turn it off and not let the crew interact with it at all.
That seems wise, to be honest. It's a troublesome device.
It does nothing but bring trouble, both interpersonal trouble and spawning things that take over the ship every time someone uses it. And as you can see, Barkley was addicted to the holodeck, so clearly you can slip into just wanting to live in that fantasy world 24/7. So it seems like a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Riker fall in love with someone on the holodeck, and I'm thinking like second season or something like that, and he got all messed up for that about that for years.
He did. Geordi created a creepy holographic representation of a real person and fell in love with her, and then met the real person, and she was weirded out by it. As well,
surprising that, isn't it? I don't know why. I think Leah Brahms probably overreacted to that situation.
Right. It's like this total flattery, Leah. Come on. No, it's very creepy. The holodeck is one of those fantastic ideas that seems like in practice you don't want it. But my question to you, Stephen, I was thinking about this a little bit, is if you had access to a holodeck, what would you do with it?
Ooh, goodness. What would I do with a holodeck? Unlike the rather bored members of the Starship Enterprise, I haven't actually thought about engaging in the wildest of fantasies on the holodeck. Oh, yes.
And their fantasies, I will say, are not all that wild. They usually involve either pretending to be Sherlock Holmes or pretending to be a hard-boiled detective. Dixon Hill.
They do seem to want to be like detectives for some reason.
Everybody wants to solve a mystery.
On ancient Earth, like they don't have enough of this in their own lives, you know. I would like, I as a Canadian, I think like if I was stuck on a starship, I would probably like create some sort of a hockey rink or something like that. Oh. And play hockey in the holodeck, because I'm not too sure such facilities exist elsewhere on the Enterprise.
Yes,
I know it's very, very, very boring, but I don't think I'd want to create alternate fantasies and sort of fall in love with fictional characters.
It does seem
that could just lead to trouble.
Dangerous.
It does.
And whether you could play hockey with or against your favorite legendary hockey players.
That was exactly it. I think that would be enough. You know, I wouldn't necessarily want to befriend Guy Lafleur or something like that. I think I'd be content enough to exist side by side with him in a holodeck and then save the program and leave and go back to my day-to-day business on the Enterprise afterwards. I think it's probably a safe bet.
Well, there you go. I was thinking about what I would do, and I couldn't. I was thinking, well, if I had access to a holodeck, I would probably be on a starship, and the thing that I would want to do, as Scott McNulty now, is probably be on a starship, so that seems kind of weird. So maybe I would, I probably wouldn't be the captain of the starship, so maybe I would have one of these Reginald Barkley-esque programs where I am the guy who's in charge and have all the characters that I, or people, I suppose, because they'd be actual people, that I interact with have to do what I tell them. And then hilarity would ensue when one of my co-officers would find out about this program, and I'd get into deep trouble. Which is, in fact, a plot of a Star Trek The Next Generation episode, but I don't get points for creativity, sadly. But this episode, so this is the holodeck. It starts with our friends, Geordi and Data, pretending to be Sherlock Holmes and Watson. Mm-hmm. And we get treated to Geordi's spot-on English accent.
Hang on. Obviously, the holodeck does not alter. It may change your clothes that you wear when you're on the holodeck, but it does not alter how you say the words.
No, it's pretty bad. And this is where we find out Data is going to solve this mystery. It's unclear. I am not a Sherlock Holmes expert, so I don't know if they are just playing through a well-known Sherlock Holmes story or if they're doing an amalgamation of Sherlock Holmes stories. But Data solves the mystery. he throws a book of matches, or a box of matches, I guess, at the character who's kind of, he's interrogating, his suspect. And the crux is that the character should be left-handed, and so he should catch the matches with his left hand. He catches it with his right hand, to which Data ignores and says, "Aha, see, you are left-handed, so you must have done it." And Geordi points out that, in fact, he caught it with his right hand, and then Data's like, something's wrong with the holodeck.
His balloon is immediately burst.
Yes, he's very sad. So they end the program, and they call Barclay to fix it, which I thought was weird, because...
Well, calling Barclay to fix anything would be weird, but I'm intrigued to hear how you end the sentence.
Well, because... So the chief engineer of the Enterprise and Data, who is good at everything, are there. You think they could take a second to see what the problem is themselves and not have to call Reg, who is probably actually doing important work somewhere. But no, they say, "Hey, Reg, get over here. You need to check out the spatial dampeners or something." Because characters who are supposed to be left-handed are right-handed, and this is ruining our fantasy world. Fix it.
I want to interject just because this is his first and only scene in the episode, but the actor who played the character who's sort of being interrogated has the superb name. His actual name is Clement von Frankenstein.
What?
And I did laugh when I looked that up on Memory Alpha. I think that's his real name. He's a German actor. I think he was born in Germany and moved to England or something. So his actual title is much longer than that, but he goes by the name of Clement von Frankenstein, and it is actually part of his real name. It's a damn shame that he never got a spot in the opening credits.
That would have been awesome. He's Frankenstein's actor. That is, and he has impressive facial hair. I don't know if it's actually his facial hair or not, but they slap some mutton chops on him, and it's good. So good job, Mr. von Frankenstein. It's hard even to keep a straight face say that, but it's not his fault. So Reg comes in, he fiddles with something. Actually, he asks the computer to check itself, which once again, I thought, couldn't Geordi and Data do this? It takes 2 seconds. But no, they're off doing whatever it is they're doing. And the computer's like, nope, everything's good. I don't know what the problem is, except for this protected area that you probably shouldn't look in. And Reg is like, well, bring up that protected area. Yeah. And so we look at some code, and then Reg is like, I see no problem just running this random program. So let's give it a go. And who materializes but Professor James Moriarty? So once again, this episode, I think, is a parable for the poor cybersecurity of the Enterprise. Because we get Reg just running random programs. Is not good. And then, really, this whole thing is a phishing attack by Moriarty against Captain Picard to get his command password, which is also a very bad password.
What, Epsilon, like 337? Like, it's something very easily recognizable.
Yes. And he succeeds. I mean, we're jumping to the end, but he succeeds in getting these command codes. And so, I think, Starfleet, you really have to work on your security training because clearly your crew members have no problem running any kind of code they find anywhere and just, you know, blurting out their password wherever in front of other people.
It's the early days of cyber. You know, they didn't have, like, you know, click all the images that are storefronts or, like, you know, your password must be at least 8 digits long and contain a number and a character. You know, this was not the case in 1992 or 93 when the show aired.
No, I think, well, I was going to say that perhaps Captain Picard should turn on two-factor authentication, but one could argue that, in fact, it is two-factor authentication because he has to use his voice that is recognized by the computer, and then he can use his little command phrase. The problem with that, of course, is that you can create a hologram of Captain Picard with his exact voice and just tell him to tell, say, the password that you have phished, which is what I assume Moriarty has done.
He hacked it very, very, very easily in this episode.
And he was a genius, so, you know, you have to give him a little credit. But it is just bad security practice, people. This is an important service announcement from me to the listeners of this show. Go ahead and pause the podcast and turn on two-factor authentication on all of your accounts just in case you ever go onto a holodeck and a sentient hologram tries to take over your Gmail account. You don't want that.
No. Or if you want to, like, you know, visit the collision of two planets and you need to probably jet out of the way in 5 hours or less. Probably not the time to sort of open yourself up to cyber attacks.
Exactly. And what? That's another question. That's so that's the B story right there. They're going to visit these two planets. We haven't even gotten to Professor Moriarty. He appears, but and the two planets are colliding. One assumes there's a lot of work for everybody because this is like super rare occasion. But Geordi and Data are off playing in the holodeck.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense.
And the funny thing is that it's like when, you know, when they discover the problem, Geordi actually says, you know, we should probably get back to the Enterprise. You know, this is, well, maybe you should have not actually gone in there in the first place.
They were just going to do like a 15-minute Sherlock Holmes thing.
You know, it never works out that way. You think, oh, I got 15 minutes to kill before work. Let's turn on the Xbox One. No, it'll never come out good.
Nope, don't do it. I think that speaks to the addictive nature of the holodeck. One imagines that Geordi probably dragged Data into this. And I get the feeling that Geordi doesn't really like the Sherlock Holmes program, but he does it because he knows that Data will do it because Data likes it. And so he needs a buddy to go into the holodeck. So it doesn't look like he has a problem. He's just hanging out with his friend. There's no problem here.
It's quite clear that Geordi is there to sort of make Data happy. Because Data relishes his job as Sherlock Holmes, as you can tell by Geordi's accent, he is only filling time as Watson.
That's right. He's just thinking about, how can I incorporate Leia Brahms into this situation?
can we bring her in? He is essentially sort of just playing along with the tea party that Data is arranging.
That's right. He has his tiara on and he's sipping fake tea, just making Data happy. Barkley has been abandoned and told to fix the thing that they have broken. And so he's trying to fix it. He runs this program that he finds in protected memory without a second thought. And Moriarty appears, explains the last episode that Moriarty was in, which is very helpful. And he explains what happens. And to Barkley, who had not heard. Now, here, another problem I have with this is Barkley, as we know, big fan of the holodeck. He's like an expert in all hollow things, which is, you know, I guess is why they called him. But he has no idea. He's never heard of this Moriarty incident. And this seems like this would be like the biggest holodeck-related thing.
you think would have made the newsletter is what you're saying.
Exactly. Maybe Captain Picard would have tweeted about it or something. But
hashtag don't open holodeck.
That's right. Yes, hashtag hello Moriarty. But no, he doesn't know anything about it. And Moriarty tells him, and Barclay's like, well, I don't know. Basically, Moriarty's like, hey, I know I'm on a ship. Is Captain Picard still the captain? And Barclay's like, how do you know all of this? And Barclay's like, Moriarty's like, I know I'm a hologram. I'm on the holodeck. Get with the program, Barkley.
Yes, literally and figuratively. It is, this is the thing about episodic television. You're saying about how, you know, it's rare that Star Trek actually has a returning character whose, you know, name isn't Q or the Borg or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for someone like me, I remember Elementary Dear Data. I remember it happening. I remember Moriarty being in it. But I don't remember the particulars of that episode. And I can imagine that a viewer from, you know, in contemporary times, having, you know, that episode being 4 years ago, probably wouldn't have remembered anyway. So even though it felt like kind of needless exposition, I, for one, appreciated Barclay's dim-wittedness in having to ask Moriarty all these questions so that he could recap the events of the previous episode for me, the casual viewer,
I could get caught up. I thought it made perfect sense because it solved that very problem, right? It just felt like it's a little weird that Barclay didn't already know this. But Moriarty explains it very succinctly, which I appreciate. And Barclay is as unbelieving as you would think he would be. And basically, Moriarty's like, I want to talk to the captain. Barclay's like, I gotta see if the captain wants to talk to you.
Yep.
And I'm gonna put you back in storage. But I'll be back. And so Moriarty dissolves. Reg closes the little hatch and goes off. One imagines to talk to Captain Picard, though. Why couldn't he hail Captain Picard with his comm badge? We don't know. The twist is that he comes back. Moriarty comes back when Barkley has left, and it is clear that he has gained control over his own hollow destiny. And that's just the setup. Mm-hmm. Haven't even gotten into the episode. But now we know Moriarty is looking to get out of the holodeck. And then we have this B-plot that you already summarized, that these two planets are smashing together and they're going to turn into a star and everybody's excited. But you can't get too close, obviously, because it's going to be a star. Ooh, that's setting it up for later.
Yes. Chekhov's star. Chekhov's right. Planetary collision.
You know, it's going to come up again. And then this episode, I think, brings up some interesting, an interesting moral dilemma that I don't think they actually solve it all. Actually, I know they don't solve it at all. Because Captain Picard comes down to the holodeck and he's like, "Hey, Moriarty, how have you been?" And Moriarty's like, "You promised me that you would try and get me off the holodeck because I'm sentient, and basically you've imprisoned me for 4 years and you haven't done anything," which does seem problematic.
Yep.
Because he's a prisoner. He hasn't really done... I mean, he is Professor Moriarty, so we know he's not a good guy. But... Should he be pilloried for the fictional things that he has done, or should he be, given a chance to live out a real life and you know, make himself what he is and exceed his programming like Data wants to do? Is the moral quandary that they kind of touch on, but then they don't really do anything about it.
They don't. And they said, I don't believe Picard for a second. Oh, we totally have been exploring and investigating why this happened. No, you literally have not mentioned him in 4 years.
No, you put it in so your much personal
so that, so much so that the Moriarty incident is not even like part of the holodeck manual that Red Barkley has probably read back
yes.
in front.
That's right. It should be in like big bold letters. Do not try to create a character who is smarter than yourself. Yep. Always use fictional names. But no, nobody knows about it. Moriarty, of course, is bummed because he's been locked up for 4 years with a little bit of knowledge of where he is. One imagines not a great thing to do, mm-hmm. but what are you going to do? And then so basically he says, "I want you to let me leave the holodeck." And everybody's like, "Well, you can't leave the holodeck, dude, because you're a hologram. See, look, I'll take this book and throw it out the door, and it will melt, basically." Mm. And Moriarty's like, "Well, no harm, no foul. If I melt, I melt. Let me give it a try." And he walks out, and he's in the corridor of the Enterprise. Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun, commercial break.
That's right. And which seems, everybody kind of takes it for at its face value, which seems problematic to me.
Well, they're very accepting of facts in the 24th century. I suppose, when you see all the wonders that they see, they're scientists above all. They sort of accept that it is a reality, and they want to get to the bottom of it. So it's understandable, yeah, I guess.
And so, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched this episode, you should watch it, because I'm about to ruin a critical part of it, which is, in fact, the characters don't know this yet, but Moriarty, being the clever man that he is, we are running... So this is a holodeck program that is running within a holodeck program. So it's two layers of holodeck program. At the moment, there's going to be another one later. in which, so the original holodeck program is Moriarty and B22 Baker Street, 21 actually, Baker Street.
221B Baker Street,
there
yes.
You go. That's the one. Sherlock Holmes' office, people. I'm a busy man. I can't remember these things. And Moriarty has constructed another program that replicates the Enterprise outside of the holodeck so that he can leave the holodeck. And this is all an elaborate scheme in which he can make a situation in which Captain Picard will give him Captain Picard's very poor password so that he can then take over the real Enterprise and try and get out of the Enterprise. Basically, it was a shuttlecraft. Although it's unclear to me. So here's the problem with this.
Okay.
Because Moriarty knows that he can't leave the holodeck. But so he creates a holographic environment so he can leave the holodeck and trick everybody else into thinking that he's left so that they will give him what he wants. But then how is he going to leave his second holodeck program and go off into the real world, which is his goal, when he knows he can't do that?
I think he was trying to trick Picard and his team to sort of come up with a...
Oh, well, that's true.
To sort of come up with an actual way to do it. And so in order to trick them, he tricks them in holodeck so that they'll, act so that in 5 hours they can come up with a solution to beam the Countess into the real world. Because I think he overplays this. I think he assumes that he can become sentient, but I think at the end of the episode we sort of find out that no, he actually cannot.
No, well, he is sentient. He just can't become a real boy, right?
Yeah, he can't. Corporeal. He can't be that, yes.
Exactly. And so I forgot. This is a key part of the episode that I forgot. So he says, hey, I am, the holodeck has programmed my perfect companion, and I would like her too to join me in the real world. But she was not given my parameters, so we actually have to work to make her corporeal. Unlike me, who I could just walk off the holodeck because I think, therefore I am. So you, Picard, and Data have to figure out, and Barclay, have to figure out how to do this and get her to be real. And that leads them to think, well, maybe we can use a transporter. They're kind of just pulling ideas out of the air.
Yeah, why not? It solves everything else. Let's just try that.
The two most troublesome pieces of technology on a starship are the holodeck and the transporter. So why don't we just put them together and see what happens?
Mm-hmm.
I did find it hard to believe, though, that they say no one has ever attempted to transport something out of a holodeck and into the real world. I feel like if you have those two things, at some point, somebody who's drunk, perhaps, is just going to try and do it.
After a particularly long night at 10:04, I imagine that Chief O'Brien probably stumbled in there and says, why not? Let's give it a shot.
That's right. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Energize. it turns out, so they try to transport a chair, and it doesn't work, and then eventually it does, and everybody's happy. And this is Data feels like something's up. He's not sure why, but there are some weak indicators that something's not right. The transporter log doesn't exist, even though they had transported something successfully. They try to at this point, Moriarty has taken over command controls of the Enterprise, the fake Enterprise, so in the second holodeck program. And so they try to get them back, and they can't. And this is when Picard says, well, let me just tell you my password, everybody, and see what'll happen. And Geordi's like, okay, it seems like we have command controls. And he tries to do something command control-y, and it doesn't work. And this is, we get another echo back to the very beginning of the episode when Data throws something at Geordi, and Geordi catches it with his right hand,
I think? Left hand.
Oh, his Geordi left hand.
Is right-handed, yeah.
Yes, they switched it up on us. And that's what Data's like, aha! We're still on the holodeck, Captain Picard. And Captain Picard is like, why do you say that, Data? And Data goes into his Sherlock mode, and Captain Picard's like, okay, I guess that makes sense. And then I don't understand why Data just didn't do this in the first place, but he takes off his comm badge and throws it at the wall, and the holodeck grid appears.
Which I suppose, which is amusing to think that, you know, if he could have done that, or he could have walked 5 feet in front of him and run into the wall. I'm amazed that, like, that the wall of the holodeck ends at the actual warp core, which is a pretty vital piece of the Enterprise. If I was making the holodeck wall, I would think perhaps maybe 5 feet outside of the hull, perhaps, where no one would be in danger of walking into it.
Yes. So it's interesting to think about who knows how the holodeck works. It's much like the TARDIS, right? It seems like it's far bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Because when we see it not running a program, it's just like a normal-sized room.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fill it up with three people who are in very, different parts of the ship. I guess they're just seeing different holographic things in the same room, and maybe it's using force fields for people to think like it's a little force field treadmill, so you think you're walking someplace, but you're not really going anywhere. I don't know. It's very complicated, is what I'm saying.
It's complicated. It's like green screen technology come to life, essentially, like that. Eventually, you're going to be running into the green screen.
That's right. But my point was, why didn't you just do that first instead of having to figure out all these little signals and explain to everybody? But I think that speaks to how he likes to be Sherlock Holmes. So he wanted to explain, as Sherlock Holmes does, how he brilliantly deducted it and then prove it by just showing everybody, see?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, oh, yeah.
I like that twist. I don't know what I thought about it at the time, but I thought I knew enough about the episode, or at least I remembered enough about the episode, although I was surprised by Barclay showing up, so I guess I didn't know as much as I thought I did. But I forgot about the twist about the holodeck inside the holodeck simulation. So when that actually happened, I was like genuinely, ooh, how interesting. So I was pleased enough when Data threw his badge at the wall. So
no, I thought it was a good reveal. I just think, why don't you just start there, Data, and save everyone the lecture?
Yep.
But well,
Data does love his lectures.
It's true. And so now we know, well, at least now Picard and Data and the viewers and Barclay know that they are in the holodeck still, and that Geordi is a hologram. There's a nice moment where hologram Geordi, you could see on his face that he realizes he's a hologram and he didn't know. So that was a nice moment. But he doesn't have like an existential crisis. I can't even say it.
No, but he looks crestfallen when Picard and Data want to have a chat. And so Picard turns to Geordi.
Yes.
He said, LaForge, can you excuse us? And he just sort of slinks away. Like, I just want to be included. And it just echoes the unfortunate social life that Geordi has, and that he, you know, he plays along with Data in his Sherlock Holmes fantasy world just so he can hang out with a friend. And even hologram Geordi is excluded from events. So in that regard, it's a very accurate representation of the Enterprise.
Yes, that's how good the holodeck is.
It's the thing. We have to have a very socially awkward engineer who never gets invited to parties.
Oh, poor Geordi.
Yeah.
Unlucky in love, that Geordi is. And life, I suppose. So he's like, oh my gosh, we're on the holodeck. And also, Data, do you just realize, I totally said my password out loud. And Data's like, why'd you do that?
Exactly. The shock is it's spoken with the, you know, of accidentally entering your password field in the email password so that everyone can see it. And it's not just little stars. You could tell that Picard has done this before.
And he's like, oh, darn it.
Yeah.
Tricked again. And this is when now Moriarty actually has control over the real Enterprise, or possibly, or does he? I don't know. Because spoiler alert, he doesn't. Because this is when Data and Picard work some fancy magic, and they add yet another holodeck program onto this, in which they are simulating the Enterprise outside the Enterprise that is outside the main holodeck program, which is, of course, all on the real Enterprise, which is actually still perilously falling into this, what is it, the stars colliding. Because I guess Moriarty actually does turn off a bunch of stuff on the real Enterprise, and then they figure out to trick him by making this holodeck program so that he thinks he's in control and doing all kinds of stuff with Riker, holographic Riker, and holographic Worf, who are also very true to life. And they try to get basically he says, I want a shuttlecraft because we have he makes them transport his lady friend, and now she's corporeal, and he says, well, you know, now that I've got my lady, I need a sweet ride, and
so give me one of your random shuttlecrafts.
Exactly. I want your although he makes a deal with Riker, right? He's like, okay, Riker, I will give you back control of the Enterprise after you transport my lady friend and make her corporeal. And Riker's like, well, I don't like it, but we don't have a lot of time. So, okay. They do it. And then Riker's like, okay, you have your friend. Give us back the Enterprise. Moriarty's like, well, about that, I'm the bad guy. You may not have remembered this. I have another request. Mm-hmm. Give me a shuttlecraft. And Riker's like, ugh, fine. And so they go off to the shuttle bay. They give them like the tiniest, crappiest shuttlecraft they have.
Yeah, like the used one, the one that, you know, that it's pretty much doesn't have the trade-in value that the others do.
No, but it's like it's equipped with like OK Google or Alexa, so it can be totally voice operated. Which is great.
Is there warp power on shuttlecraft? I'm unfamiliar with the technology.
I don't think the shuttlecrafts have warp capability. I know the runabouts in Deep Space Nine do. And then the larger shuttlecraft, I think. But the one they show is like the tiny little shuttlecraft. So it's weird. But I imagine that that's not a problem because they are holograms, so they don't age. Right?
That's true. And it's funny. Yeah, they don't age, do they? And so whenever at the end, I hope you don't mind me jumping in the end, but Picard says that they, there's enough adventures to sort of keep them going for the rest of their lives. The rest of their lives is as long as that thing is running, essentially.
It's forever.
Forever. So I hope they're updating. I hope they're buying new modules for the little video game, more variety video game that they have, because A, it's going to be a very long trip to Mellus 2 in that one shuttlecraft for just their first journey. Unless, of course, that was a bluff from Riker, and actually, Mellus 2 is a prison planet from the Klingons, and they are about to be eviscerated. That could be it.
Riker wins.
Yep. Even hologram Riker wasn't going to let let hologram Moriarty get the best of him.
Yes, that's right. And that's right, the big reveal. In walks Captain Picard after they fly out with their little shuttlecraft, and he says, "Computer, end program." And you're like, "What?" And the program ends. And then he says, "Computer, end program." And you're like, "What?" And then he's in the holodeck, and he leaves. And we find out that they have tricked Moriarty, and that they're on this little, a neon wafers of holographic data, I guess. I don't really know what they are. That apparently don't need to be powered, or they're self-powered, because they pull it out of the wall. Barclay pulls it out of the wall.
Yep.
They take it off to the ready room, where Captain Picard explains it to everybody, because everybody loves a lecture. And then he he shows them this sweet battery pack / storage thing that I guess Barclay came up with, and they plug it in there, and that's when he says, as you said, that they'll live out the rest of their lives having great adventures, being trapped. But I guess they don't know they're trapped, so it's okay.
Exactly. If the goldfish don't realize that they're in a tiny universe, it's fine to keep them captive here forever.
That's right. And so I don't know. It seems like it's a very neat wrap up, right? And I think I like the kind of the inception of, holographic programs within holographic programs, and it ends with Barclay saying computer ed program in the ready room, which I thought was a nice touch, and he's very happy when, in fact, reality doesn't disintegrate around him and reveal he's on a holodeck. So I thought I liked all of that, but I did think it's kind of a problematic ending because Moriarty is a sentient being, and they have trapped him.
they've ignored him for 4 years, and then when he flares up again, they just trap him again.
And they're just going to ignore him for the rest of their lives. And Moriarty is immortal, so one assumes what's going to happen is, Captain Picard's going to retire eventually, and he's going to be stuck with this thing, and he's going to put it in his chateau somewhere in France, where he's making wine with his brother, or his brother dies, I think. Ooh, spoiler alert for
family. Yep.
Yes. He's going to, 20 years later, he's going to be cleaning out his attic or something, or he's going to die, and his cousin is going to come and clean out the attic, and they're going to be like, "What the heck is this thing?" And throw it away, and then Moriarty's going to die. So it's like delayed murder.
It is kind of that way. Or perhaps it's Barclay who's in charge of this thing, because he is the last one holding the thing at the end. And perhaps he takes it home and, upgrades his console from an Xbox 360 to an Xbox One. And it's not backwards compatible. And it just sits there gathering dust. And he doesn't actually... And so forever in the life of Moriarty and Regina there, they are stuck on a very long journey to Mellus 2, a journey that they will never, ever complete.
That's right. Maybe that's the cruel irony of the program. We do not find that out, is that it's just the journey never ends, but they don't realize that because they're programmed. So they think that they are actually making progress, but for eternity, they are just stuck on that shuttlecraft. Mm-hmm. This was a fun episode of Star Trek that, when you think about it a little bit more, is kind of depressing.
Very depressing indeed. Sort of putting a hamster on a treadmill thinking he's actually getting somewhere, and he's really not.
So sad. But I do think the actor who played Moriarty, whose name I don't remember, but...
It's Daniel Davis.
And he does a fantastic job. He did a fantastic job in the first episode he appears in, and 4 years later, still fantastic. He is the best part.
I know, and I was surprised to learn, because I think he was in The Nanny as the butler, I think. I never watched The Nanny, but he was in that. He was sort of playing a very posh British butler in that show. And I had no idea that he is, in fact, from Arkansas and has sort of made a career out of putting on this sort of posh, generic British accent to appear in American TV shows. And he does a very good job at it, I thought.
Yeah, I had no idea. I am now reading his memory alpha page, and I had no idea. If you had asked me where this guy is from, I would have said clearly, he is British of some kind. British of some kind. Yes, that's a technical term.
Yep.
And I never even made the connection that he was the guy from The Nanny, which I have watched only as I'm flipping channels and then try to change as quickly as possible.
That's exactly where I know it from as well.
Sorry, fans of The Nanny. I'm sure it's lovely. But not for me. Not everything has to be
the Random Nanny podcast will probably be upset about this. But
they can be fine. If there is such a thing and they invite me on, I will happily be on it. But I got to tell you, I do not like The Nanny, so maybe you should pick somebody else. But what did you think of this episode overall?
I really actually quite liked it. I'm not too sure where, you know, this is season six when, you know, most shows are sort of kind of like winding down. It's probably time we wrap this sort of thing up again. But I seem to have memories of enjoying season six, although I think they were sort of veering towards that thing when what shows do when, like Star Trek, I think there's another one around the same time where the entire thing takes place in the holodeck and it's in a Wild West thing, and I think Worf is involved in it, and and that's when Patrick Stewart directs the thing, as I recall. And I think you can sort of tell that, oh, let's just play around in the holodeck for a little bit for some of these episodes and have the actors direct them. So you think that was sort of lend itself to being self-indulgent, but I actually quite enjoyed this episode, and I enjoy that time period. I think season six might be one of my favorite seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation. I think the characters, the actors, have sort of really grown into their roles and were comfortable with it, and then not quite to the point where they're finding it tedious and ready to wrap it up.
Yeah, I think that I totally agree. This episode is great. I think it's better than the first Moriarty episode, which name I forget, but
Elementary, my dear Data. I think.
Well,
it is.
Of course, that is correct. Which I like that episode, so I'm not knocking that episode either. But I feel like this one, everybody is a little more comfortable as the characters, and it gives it it continues to examine that interesting concept of what happens if a hologram gains sentience. Now, as I said, I think, you know, at the end, the answer is not very satisfactory. But sometimes in life, you don't get neat little endings. Even though, in fact, for the show, it's a neat little ending, but as you think of it, kind of, you know, at the repercussions of it, it's not so neat. But I guess they don't tell anybody.
No. And I also like Reg Barkley. I think he's one of my favorite characters. And here he's not, like, the focal point. And, you know, he's not, like, in his first episode where he's sort of this, you know, he's bumbling and idiotic to a fault. Mm-hmm. Or the other, I think there's a later episode where he sort of becomes king of the holodeck and sort of has a computer going through his mind. I can't remember the particulars of it. But this episode, it just feels like, you know, he is your basic average Starfleet employee who, you know, there's probably a lot more Reg Barkleys on the Enterprise than mm-hmm. there are people like Data and LaForge and everything like that. And so it's kind of neat to see a window into the world of sort of the middle management of the Enterprise to see how the real life sort of lives and how they kind of interact with the command crew.
Yes, and that's why I think Reg is such an interesting character, because just like you said, he's not like this super confident, he is competent, but not confident. And so he's an expert in his field, but he gets nervous. And his first scene is he's almost knocking over Geordi and Data as he's running to the holodeck to try and fix it, which is the perfect way to introduce Reg Barkley, I think. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for allowing me back on and for randomly picking an episode that I remembered fondly and enjoyed watching again.
Well, see, sometimes the universe smiles upon us.
It does indeed. Or perhaps I'm just living in my own dream simulation where I was invited back on a Star Trek podcast to talk about an episode that I enjoyed.
That's right. Computer and program.
Nope, we're still here. Excellent.
Phew. Although, if you're the hologram, or I'm the hologram, and I say that, this is like the third holographic program that we're in. So you who knows?
And it just keeps shutting down and shutting down. we could say that phrase 100 times, and we will never get to the end of the hologram.
Never. But we have gotten to the end of the podcast, so I will return you to your Sunday, and thank you again for being on.
Thank you very much.